want to welcome everyone back to Juno Afternoon. I'm Rhonda McBride. Well, joining us, we have two very familiar names in Alaska Native media, both Tlingit. Jocelyn Estes, who is a national correspondent for Indian Country Today, and also, by the way, an old friend of KTOO, and so is Vera Starbard, editor of the First Alaskans magazine, also a playwright, and she also has the Writing Raven blog. Both women, I'll have to tell you, have worn a lot of hats over the years, and they've also handled communications for Native health organizations, and probably are in a good position to talk about both yesterday and today, and how the Alaska Native community has responded to this second pandemic that they face. Well, actually, you know, we're going to be talking about a series of pandemics. Welcome, both of you. Jocelyn, maybe we'll start off with you. You know, you get kind of the bird's eye view in your job with Indian Country Today, looking at the national picture. How does Alaska compare to what you're seeing nationwide?
Well, we're doing extraordinarily well, even though if you have lost a loved one, I'm sure it doesn't feel that way, and it's terribly tragic. I've actually done some obituaries and interviewed some families who have lost loved ones, and it's just heartbreaking. But in Alaska, so, you know, Alaska usually is at the top of the wrong lists. We're number one in chlamydia, number one in sexual assault, that sort of thing. Now, for a change, we have bragging rights. We're number one in the rate of people vaccinated. And then Wallet Hub put together, looked at some statistics. And they said Alaska is also, I mean, they called Alaska the safest state. And they looked at things like the rate of vaccination, rates of testing, hospitalizations, death, and that kind of thing. And according to all of those numbers, we're doing pretty well. Well, we're doing great compared to the rest of the country.
Well, Vera, you've written plays, and I know in your blog you took up a story that was in the media that raised questions about how one Native health organization was distributing its vaccines. And, you know, I thought that maybe this would be a good time to give some context to the Native experience with pandemics, and not just one, you know, TB, polio. Can you talk about perhaps the need for the state at large to understand what Alaska Natives experienced 100 years ago?
Yeah, I mean, we all live with it. We all live with the effects very present on our minds and certainly on our culture from 100 years ago, from 50 years ago, from really even H1N1, which had much worse cases here for Alaska Native people. And it's not something that our elders have let us forget, and it's not something we want to forget. It was devastating to our people as far as just purely death. It was devastating to our cultures in that we lost so many elders and young people, and we lost a lot of leadership at a time when we needed it most.
You know, I was thinking of those Bristol Bay kids, because many of them were Yupik-speaking children, so they get transported into this orphanage, and, you know, they're having a cold turkey English lesson and having to eat different foods. I mean, and these were the people who repopulated Bristol Bay, so there's a big gap, and there must be tremendous historical trauma.
Yeah, my grandfather on my mother's side was orphaned at a very young age. His mother died of illness, and he was separated. And the federal system and the state systems at that time used pandemics or epidemics. They used illness specifically to separate and educate in a Western way. These things weren't just passive. They were sometimes maliciously used. And in this case, he lived away from his culture and in fact was adopted as a Tlingit. I'm actually part Denaina, but My grandfather at 15 was adopted as a Tlingit from a children's home. And just, I can't understate the effect of that on entire multiple generations of our very immediate ancestors and currently living grandparents and parents today.
You know, you are currently working on a play that sort of involves your mother's experience.
Yeah, my grandmother father's.
Your grandmother.
Yeah, she had a pretty great life. Exciting, interesting. Marlene Johnson. I'll even throw out that name there. Hopefully she's listening. And we talked. I was staying with her at the time this pandemic started, and so I asked her a few questions about, you know, polio. She had polio, and she said things. And I definitely learned some stuff, but it was also to get a child's perspective from that era of pandemic was an interesting thing to get to. And we've been listening to our elders from the start of this, and the humor and the sort of devastation both have been really searing in my mind the whole past year now almost.
Well, what did your grandmother share with you, one of her memories?
Well, I have to tell you, of course there was a lot of stuff to deal with that was negative. She actually said it was kind of fun because she got to go to Ketchikan and they gave her ice cream in the hospital. So we had to talk about that too. But I mean, that her generation was definitely one that took it pretty seriously because it was affecting her siblings. It was devastating at the same time from a child's perspective. She got ice cream, which she didn't get in the village.
Well, polio was just one of many epidemics. Jocelyn, I'm sorry, yeah. I didn't mean to jump on you.
Oh, I was just going to say, I talked to Joe Sanungatuk. I did a story about Alaska's history of epidemics. He's from the village of Wales, and he was telling me, and actually the Anchorage Daily News did a story on this too. And in the Anchorage Daily News, they told the story of how, well, let me finish with Joe first. Joe was found with his dead mother in their little house, and he was taken. He was still nursing. I mean, it's just, you know, I said earlier there are some heartbreaking stories now. This was one of those. But the Anchorage Daily News also reported that a Presbyterian minister came to town and lined up the orphans and lined up the men and the women and told the men and the women to get married, anybody who was single, to marry someone. And he just picked them out, lined people up and said, you go with her, you go with him, and went down the line and, you know, told people to marry each other, married them, I mean, performed the wedding ceremony, and then doled out the orphans to the people that were newlyweds. And Joe said his mother was one of the people who was orphaned, or not his mother, because his mother was dead, but one of his relatives was orphaned, and he said that she was constantly looking for her relatives. They moved into Nome, and she would go up and down the, you know, visiting people and trying to find out if she was related to them. Joe said one of the things that happened was siblings were not kept together. And some of these families, they had enough mouths to feed. They were not happy to get more people. They were not happy to get children. And so it was, I mean, I think in some respects, I mean, you hear about villages where so many people died, there were not enough able-bodied survivors to go hunting and fishing, and survivors starved. And I think of it's pretty much like a Holocaust. And,
so, Jocelyn,
you know,
let me stop you there a little bit. So then and now, I mean, I guess you can understand why the Native health system was very aggressive with all these very recent memories.
Yeah, well, the thing is that when I did, I interviewed a doctor in Bethel, and he at the very start of the interview, he joked, "We have a lot of experience in donning and doffing PPE." And I was, you know, this was pretty early on, and I was going, "What are you talking?" I didn't say that, but I was thinking, "What are you talking about?" And basically, he said, "We have a lot of experience putting on and taking off personal protective equipment." And he went on to explain, because there is still a lot of tuberculosis, which was one of the last and most devastating epidemics that hit Alaska Natives. And really, the tribal health system evolved out of that. And what the tribal health system learned to do was how to deliver health services across vast distances in tiny communities where you couldn't have a lot of personnel. I mean, if you have a village of 100 people, you're not going to have a doctor living there. And so, and then they tied all of that, what's going on in the villages, together with sub-regional clinics and regional hospitals and on into the specialty care you can get at the Alaska Native Medical Center. And the whole focus is on disease prevention. And so there, I mean, people call me up and tell me, "It's time for you to come get this done." They sent, or they send you letters. "It's time for your mammogram. It's time for this. It's time for that." Anytime you say you go in for, you know, some kind of a hurt finger or something, they'll say, "Okay, I just looked at your chart. You need these shots," and they give it to you. So they're very practiced. They have a lot of experience. The other thing that's helped is the dedication. So the Anchorage Daily News had a story a little while ago about how people were, healthcare providers went to villages and communities by boat, by snow machine, airplane, and sleds. I mean, if you've ever ridden in a sled behind a four-wheeler, you know, this is not luxury travel. But they went to villages and they gave shots in planes on the tarmac and that kind of thing.
One thing that
Rhonda, let me just add one more thought. That's why Alaska is doing so well. I mean, Dr. Ann Zink I interviewed her, and she said Alaska's success is due to the success of the tribal health system in delivering vaccinations.
So let me turn to Vera, because in your blog, you talked about that really, I mean, it is kind of not a time where you do a happy dance over something like this, but you were talking about then and now and the Alaska Native health system's response being remarkable.
Yeah, I think for Alaska Native people, this whole year has been kind of horrible for everyone. Like, it's been pretty grim. And as far as sort of failures at the federal level or with other organizations, whether it's state or municipal, and so political and just rough. The Alaska Native Health System has been a huge sort of beacon of hope, not to just overstate or make something very cliche, but it's been handling it really well because it's gotten so ahead of it. It didn't wait for a direction from the federal level or even the state level. It was leading in all of these things. And we saw that, and we followed both the healthcare system as a system, but also the tribes were getting the message out: stay home, take care of your elders. Here's how to make sure you're washing your hands right. Here's how to wear masks. And for someone like me, when it hit the vaccine time, I was so thrilled and so relieved to see that the people that were responsible for my healthcare were getting it out more efficiently than anyone else, that we're getting it out to the people I hope they would first, which was the elders, and then open it up as quickly as they possibly could. I'm in one of the highest risk ranges, actually. At 38 years old, I'm actually much higher risk, and they made sure I got a shot. They called me. I didn't go to them. They called me. And I don't know, it's been something that, in a sort of world with a dystopian feel right now, they're a huge sort of leader in going the right way.
I want to turn to Jocelyn because one of the things I don't think people realize is that Alaska as a state has benefited because of the presence of tribal health organizations. I was in Kodiak this summer working at KMXT doing a fill-in job, and I was surprised that CANA, the Native Tribal Health Organization, provided all the testing for the whole community, or not all of it, but a good chunk of it, because they had an extra supply of test materials. So the community benefited.
What happened was the Centers for Disease Control, I mean, they knew that the vaccine was coming down the pike in months. And so they surveyed all of these healthcare providers and on 15 different factors. What's the population you serve? How many of them are at risk? How many providers do you have? What is your capability for handling fragile vaccines? And what is your capability, your capacity for giving people vaccinations? And on the basis of that, they allocated vaccine to federal, state, tribal, and military, veterans affairs, you know, all these different healthcare providers. There's some people think that natives got more than other people. They didn't, but they're dealing with a subset of the larger population, so they're able to move more quickly. And as I mentioned before, they have the capacity and the experience to do this. The other thing is that in rural Alaska, they're the only game in town. So Kodiak has the U.S. Coast Guard, so they might have some hospital facilities, but generally, rural Alaska relies on the tribal health system to get their medical care. So the tribal health system, and so it's using its own allocation for natives and non-natives. The other thing is that it's taking a huge burden off the state, and that's helping. So whatever is going to the tribal health system, I mean, anybody who gets their shot from the tribal health system is not going to the state of Alaska and asking for a shot. So it's relieving the entire, you know, system and helping with that on that front.
Well, Jocelyn and Vera, I want to thank you both for joining us. And Vera, I'll let you have the last word here on this, some things to think about going forward as we, you know, have many questions about the way things are being done.
Oh, I just encourage everyone to follow some of those leads that the tribes in Alaska Native Healthcare are doing. We've been using our cultural understanding of taking care of the community and being responsible for the community. And we're showing that works really well for the entire community, non-Native or Native. So yeah, I'm encouraged when I look at that kind of thing. And I hope everyone can kind of start to see it that way.
All right. I want to thank both of you for taking some time out. I know you're both very busy women and have lots of writing to get back to, I'm sure. Thanks.
My pleasure. Thanks, Rhonda. Bye-bye.
Bye.